I'm very happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Christy Hengst. She is an artist and she is organizer of the upcoming conference Evolving Intentions in Public Art, which is happening this Saturday, the 13th of September. And Molly Sturgis joins us. She is an artist and composer. She works with the Academy for the Love of Learning and Little Globe. And Paula Castillo, who is a public artist. She's a sculptor. All of them are involved in this upcoming conference. Welcome, ladies, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Hello. Thank you.
So, evolving intentions in public art, what's it all about?
Well, when I was kind of putting together the idea for this conference, I wanted to choose a title that would include all different ways of working. So that's a pretty general title, but basically exploring new ways of engaging the public through art that is generally something more at this point than like a statue, a bronze statue on a plaza or something.
Or a gigantic steel square that oxidizes over years.
Yeah. Often this kind of work involves ephemeral aspects that are very temporary. It may be unexpected, something that comes upon, that people come upon it just in the middle of their day and possibly opens up some unusual window of moment of consciousness. They may be anonymous, they may be guerrilla actions, and they often have also social implications where people are actually trying to contribute or change, help create change that they want to see. And so it's a little more than making a framed piece that once it's on the wall of a museum or a gallery, you're not so involved with people's interaction with that piece anymore. This kind of public art often is considering very much how people interact with it.
Now, what do we mean by public art? When you talked about a framed picture on the wall, I think of that more as, I don't know, I don't think of that as public art as much. I think of things that are outdoors.
Yeah.
And you know, public art in the United States has basically been around for over 50 years. In that sense, you know, sort of like, you know, the oxidized square of metal rusting in a plaza. The idea of new genre art parallels a working practice by artists that it's not just sort of these traditional interpretations of art, that it can flow in and out as artists interpret. And it, you know, it has its origins in avant-garde art, in Fluxus work, in the Dadaists, Surrealists. New genre art has actually been going kind of hanging around our culture for the last 30 years. And even though there may be objects, there may be a picture, there may be a mural, there may be music, theater, things that we see traditionally as art, that we recognize traditionally as art, the focus is not on that, even though it may exist. The focus is on how people are activated. And so instead of sort of like private symbolic intentions that often go along with these traditional manifestations, the focus is on human interaction and social context.
So you are a public artist.
I do the rusting pieces. In fact, here in Santa Fe, I did all the exterior metal work for the History Museum in Santa Fe. So I do that work as well. I love objects.
Yeah, I mean, but so what all of you are talking about, well, we haven't gotten to you yet, Molly, but what we're talking about seems to have a dimension of either performance or somehow interaction in it.
I mean, I think we have seen a lot more interest in that and commitment to that, as you're saying. And I agree, it's exciting for me to hear about Fluxus and that, you know, that the seed of that inspiration. I also think we're working with ancient forms of ritual and community making.
Yes,
and expression. And I think artists are careful about that in general, but I do think many, many people are coming from this place of, yes, we want meaningful interaction. What constitutes that is, you know, broad and and should be, right? But I do have to say, you know, all the artists involved in social practice or many of the public artists I know who are making objects or not. I don't make objects. I work with object makers sometimes. But I do think this, there's this, as Christy was saying, this kind of deeper concern about, you know, who are we, what are we creating, where are we going? And so artists are asking really deep questions. Mm-hmm. And collectively, I think there's a lot of knowledge. We were talking a little bit before about how I was saying I really see this as sort of creative acts of leadership, because the amount of work that goes into thinking through this kind of thing when you aren't just putting an object up, and again, I'm not, there's no hierarchy there for me, but I'm just saying when we create something where we really care about the interaction and are trying to create something that lives and breathes in a meaningful way, there's a lot of work and thought that goes into this. And that's one thing that's so exciting to me about what Christy's put together here, and I just want to say thanks to her. It's like, it is herding cats to do something like this, and a huge amount of work, but it's a really, really important catalyzing effort to bring together really important insights and thoughts.
So these things are all abstractions until we talk about specific works. So let's talk about some examples of the kinds of, that illustrate the ideas that we're talking about.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll talk about a few of the people and the projects that we're going to be talking about.
And we're going to talk about yours, too, because you've done some super cool stuff. But go ahead.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, okay. I'll start with, I mean, one of the projects that we're going to be talking about at the conference is one that Molly started that was called Life Songs. And I'm actually, I don't want to speak for her. I'm going to let her talk about it. But it is one of those projects where I feel like just hearing about it just gave me chills, because it feels like it really got underneath the surface in a way that is just very unusual. And so it works with older people, and I'm going to let her describe it. But there's also Edie Song is going to be talking about Snow Poems, the project that was here in Santa Fe a couple of years ago. We're going to be hearing about El Otro Lado and Rivers Run Through Us. These are projects that a lot of people who are listening might know something about, but not that much about, and I include myself in that. One of the reasons why I wanted to put together this conference is partly just to find out more about all these things that I feel like are actually just so amazing that are going on here, but lots of times there's not that much communication between the people who have been doing this kind of work, and it's really, you know, it's really that each of these artists are often finding their own pathways kind of intuitively. There's not a roadmap for this kind of work, and so each one often has a completely different format, or you know, I mean, it's really they're and I feel like I was craving a little more context of how do other people manage these things, and the questions that come up, and how do they think about them, and just wanting more discussion. So basically a really simple motivation, and hoping that in this conference it's not going to be so much just each person presenting their project as a kind of like a pitch or like you know, what was only so great about it, but to kind of really look a little deeper and see what worked, what didn't work, what are some of the difficulties that came up, and further questions that were generated by that work, and to share that.
Let's hear a little bit about Life Songs. I want to hear about all of your work. Mm. We've had you on the radio before talking about it, but it's a very, for I don't know any other word to use, but profound project that you've been engaged in for a really long time.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so I'll be talking about Life Songs and Coal, which is a climate change and arts project, and it's oddly in my mind they're very linked. But to focus on Life Songs, you know, we're at the, it's a program of the Academy for the Love of Learning. I started it with Andrea Fellows-Walters and Akush Labastable, who's now directing it. It was started with the opera in Little Globe, and now is there. And, you know, it is one of those examples of a project where, you know, artists start it and you kind of have an idea like, what would it be like to write music with people at the end of their life collaboratively, not a helping model? what is it to come together as a composer, as an artist with somebody at that time and write pieces together? And what would it be like for young people to sing those pieces? Like what, you know, what happens in that intergenerational exchange? And like many of us, we find ourselves then in really significant relationship with institutions like care centers or hospice, you know. And I think that, you know, that points to some of the issues probably many of us will be talking about, is sort of when you're doing relationship-based work, if you're really looking in that direction, there's so much nuance to that. It's not simple. Life Songs has been going now for 7 years, and I do say it's a profound project, you know. There's something about the end of life, and there's something about our culture that, you know, we've pushed death and dying and aging so far, and it hurts us. It wounds us deeply as a culture to not feel that and include that stage of life, and to do so artistically, and then to create public spaces. We have pop-up concerts, we have community conversations, we have new sites, you know, and we're really trying to deepen the creative practice. What is it that makes this meaningful? What makes a Life Songs, you know, have life in a way that we can kind of feel this and feel ourselves into it? And so, you know, it is, I'd say of all the projects I've been a part of starting, it's kind of been the one that, I don't know, it seems to activate a kind of collective heart and a collective need, actually, as well. And so it's an honor.
And you're engaging with people who haven't necessarily spent their lives in art.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, one of the things we're up against, and this is another issue in this work in general, is making decisions as an artist around artistic will, or sort of when do you make choices artistically that honor the participatory process, and then when do you kind of step in and say, well, actually we need to kind of make this piece, you know, live and sort of glow in this other way, and sort of this what I call a kind of continuum of the artist who works in this way around artistic will and almost straight creative facilitation. And
because these people are not composers themselves.
Yes, but I want to tell you, I mean, and it's not a small thing to say, like, everybody has something absolutely essential. And my job as a community source artist is to connect with what that thread is and to follow it with them, and then to engage in a dialogical process of back and forth. You know, what do you think about this? You heard the ocean when you were talking about, you know, the place that gives you peace. You heard the ocean. Does this sound like the ocean to you? And try to find ways that they can engage. And this is somebody who's dying in a nursing home. You know, this is not somebody who's used to somebody sitting with them and going, what do you think? Does that sound like the ocean? You know, and what does that mean for them to say, no, that doesn't quite? And then what does it mean to hear them, for them to hear their song sung back by a group of young people? You know, I'm searching for life. I'm searching for life in the dark sea, and to hear 40 people singing that to them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of exchange that I really value and I find very inspirational in my own life. You know.
It's also a real, I mean, the way you describe it, it's a huge letting go of whatever your artistic ego might be.
Oh my gosh, I love that you brought that up. I mean, I just have to say, I've worked on so many projects now, you know, with Little Globe and the Academy and this is a real issue, because we need our artists. We need to be strong and follow that vision we have inside of ourselves. We need that new territory and that new space to open us up. But at the same time, in this kind of work, yeah, we've had artists working on projects who can't actually give up the ego so much. They actually can't get away from the idea of documenting a story. And that ends up being really hard. We're not documenting somebody's life. We're saying we grow each other. We are here together, growing each other. You know, we need each other to meet. And so that's, yeah.
So Molly Sturges and Life Songs. Let's talk with Paula Castillo about what the kind of work that you've been doing.
Well, I'd like to lead off of what Molly's talking about. And, you know, the irony of public space, particularly in 20th century America, 21st century America, is that public space is not really public. It's very controlled. It's sort of passive space. And the work that Molly does, the work that Chrissy's talking about, is almost antithetical to that. That we're in one of the working impulses of community-based artists, new genre public artists, is democracy and radical democracy, which is a fully working messy thing. When we think about politics, often we think about power, and that's sort of like a narrow idea of what politics really is, which is taking sort of like, and it's by default, it's like gravity, common sense, dominant culture, how to manage human beings. And so what we end up with are these public spaces that are about human management. When we talk about politics with the big capital P, it is truly radical democracy, which is allowing people who are not part of dominant culture, like the dying in some way, and particularly in our cultural context, who are not part of it, but who are allowed to not just be activated, but who are allowed to participate effectively in that culture. And I think of, like, an example of that, I think of two, and because I'm a public artist, I deal, and I love public art, don't get me wrong, I agree with Molly, it's not a hierarchy, I love pretty much everything I do as an artist, but there are, you know, to fine-tune oneself as an artist, one of the things I came up against about 5 years ago is that I just felt sort of like I became a cannibal with my own work, that I was an object producer in this really narrow corridor of experience. And I came away after years of doing it that I thought, is this all there is to art? It's like, I'm not a factory person. I really felt like the idea of connecting, I'm not an idiosavant, you know, holed up somewhere in Cordova in my little tiny studio away from humanity. I think artists, you know, that we want to connect with people.
Well, I think that's one of the things that I see over and over again when people are talking about art now, when more women are involved with art. I think that's part of it too, is that kind of 19th and 20th century model of the solitary genius holed up in his, and I use the pronoun, you know, his studio. You know, we've got something else and something much bigger and, to me, a lot more interesting and engaging going on.
Well, I wanted to give two examples of two. So because I work a lot with public art, I deal with these large bureaucracies that are just, you know, again, like gravity, an aspect of contemporary life. And when I started working on new genre public art, I really wanted to start working anonymously. I didn't want to have to deal with large sums of money, which is required in public art, in this traditional public art. I really wanted to be able to do something that was reflected more of a positive spin on anarchy, that I had control over it, the people I was participating in had control over it. We weren't beholden to some other large human management construct. And so I'd like to compare two projects. One is actually a public project I did here in Santa Fe. It was referenced as community-based public art, sponsored, funded by the city of Santa Fe. It's the Barrio La Cañada project off of Alire and La Conquistadora. And they wanted a community project. And so I began a relationship with what at that time was Alameda Elementary School, and I got kids to take walks, and we would draw. And definitely they were activated. And then I created a mural from it, sort of taking their works and editing it down. And so there was definitely some sort of community-based. Then I did another project. I worked for a period of time for the Career Academy here in Santa Fe Public Schools, which was housed right next to the Santa Fe Art Institute, separated from them by a chain-link fence with barbed wire. And we were out in a little portable. It was basically kids who had been kicked out of Santa Fe Public Schools for whatever reason, they were just having difficulty. We were in this little portable together, about 15 kids, and my task was to teach them algebra, teach them biology, English, that kind of thing, and I really wanted to do art with them. Yeah. And so we came up with this project called Orphan Letters. And it was a pen pal letter that I would give them prompts and they would write. Like something, I can think of a kid who wrote about, she had lost her mother when she was very young, and she wrote a letter to her mother talking about her fear of water. It was this really beautiful story that she came up with. And then I became sort of like an agent in this, like not the author, sort of like the death of the author, but I don't know how else to explain it except to just say I was an agent in taking that piece and connecting it with someone else. And the thing that occurred to me is that people who are disempowered, it's a very sort of deficit-oriented approach to thinking about people. It's like, okay, there's the dominant, there's the not dominant, but we all have power, and what is it? And the thing that we all share, regardless of class, race, is we all have compassion just by being a human being on the planet. So anyway, so I shared these letters, and eventually there was this exchange, and I shared them anonymously on Facebook, and I created an anonymous Facebook account. And there were all these people who started responding to these letters, and the kids got these letters back, and what people shared was that they had also suffered. And so the kids were able to then share pieces of advice, words of wisdom, and it was a really, for me, and there was no public in it, in the sense of it wasn't anything that we displayed anywhere. It was just really real, and I was so moved by that experience as an artist. So those two examples of difference. And so the idea that, again, that it's not just sort of like activating people to participate in something, it's to create through sort of like some kind of restriction an opportunity for people to effectively contribute to a radical democracy.
Yeah, very, very interesting. And I think it brings up really interesting questions of power. And when you say, you know, the dominant and the non-dominant, and of course the quote-unquote dominant are always afraid of the others. And when compassion enters into it, that fear goes away. Let us, Paula Castillo, now let's turn to Christy Hengst, organizer of the upcoming conference, Evolving Intentions in Public Art, which is happening this coming Saturday, the 13th of September. You have been on the show before talking about a project involving these clay birds that you've taken all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that project was called Birds in the Park, and it developed slowly and organically, but basically in response to the U.S. invasion of Iraq, and starting to look at how we had decided to go to start a war, and then starting actually from there to look at other wars, and then it was kind of funny because I was silk screening images onto porcelain, and then creating three-dimensional pieces from that, and they were looking like birds, and I started to want to see those outside. So there was kind of a tract of the actual format of it, and then there was the content of it. And the content, I was at first had two separated contents. So one was this exploration of war, and then the other was a lot of family history stuff and photographs of my children when they were little, playing, and love letters and poetry and recipes, and you know, at first I was, those were two separate things, and I noticed that I felt actually uncomfortable about the idea of putting the images of missiles on the same page as my kids and stuff. And then I realized, as soon as I became conscious of that, I realized that somehow that was the heart of it. Something about that uncomfortable. So I basically, I was trying to explore for myself how these things all exist together in the world, and what my connection is, what it's with those things that happen. So at first it was a self-exploration, that basically doing the work in the studio, but as these pieces moved out and I started to kind of develop this idea of having these pieces land in different locations, and at first it was completely anonymously, in different public, like in front of the library or at a cafe or in front of City Hall or in the park. At first it was anonymous because I wanted people to encounter them without any intervention on my part. But little by little I began to realize that actually, you know, some conversations did start to happen inevitably, and then because I had to be there to watch the birds because they were very temporarily placed. And then I started to realize that actually the conversations were as much or perhaps the biggest part of the project. And especially as I went further and further afield, I started to go to other places in this country, like for instance on the Mall in Washington, D.C., or in front of the United Nations in New York, and then to other countries, it became very important for me to be there and to discuss. And that felt like a really big part of the project.
What kind of conversations did you end up having with people?
Well, a lot of conversations about different aspects of wars, people's specific experiences. Sometimes it was about a specific thing that was printed on the bird. There was a beautiful poem in Spanish that, you know, was one of the many, many things on there. But I remember having a conversation with a woman who was reading it and just crying and crying. And sometimes the conversations were more about art. But it felt like a very important part of what I was doing was just connecting with people and bringing up discussion about this stuff.
So the upcoming event this Saturday, Evolving Intentions in Public Art, brings together folks that you have gathered, the three of you, Molly, Christy, and Paula, and then a number of others. Who do you hope will attend the conference? Is it for artists, for people involved in the arts, or anybody who feels like showing up? Or?
Well, definitely anybody who feels like showing up, first of all. And I just imagine, as I was saying before, there isn't roadmaps for this kind of work. And I know when I was first starting to find my own way with various projects, I just would have loved to hear other people talk about it. So that is, I would imagine, the first group of people I would think of coming is people who are interested in doing that kind of work themselves, but also just people who are
listening to this broadcast.
Yes,
now.
Exactly. May I read the other people who are coming?
No, it's too long a list. okay. People can go to your website. Okay. What's your website?
The website for the conference is actually it's www.catherinestreetartsfestival.org.
And Catherine spelled K-A-T-H-R-Y-N.
Uh-huh. But you can also go to the website of CCA, which is where this conference is going to be held in the living room. And also, I wanted to mention Axel. Axel Contemporary is part of their Economology series, and they are also sponsoring this, and they have information about it on their website, too. And Jerry and Matthew will be speaking, and a bunch of really great, amazing people are going to be there, and I hope that people will come. And it's free with
it's
a suggested donation.
Yeah. With a suggested donation, it's from 9 to 1, and then from 3 to 5:30 there's a discussion, and then in the evening there is a dance at the garage on Catherine Street, but the rest of it is at the CCA in Santa Fe. Christy Hengst, Molly Sturges, and Paula Castillo, thank you all so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And I'll link to all this on santafe.radiocafe.org as well.